Welcome to the 1110 Leadership Podcast, where we tackle issues at the intersection of leadership, faith, and culture. I'm your host, Rob Shields, Vice President of Strategy at 1110 Leadership, and I'm joined by my co-host, founder and CEO of 1110 Leadership, David Spicker. Proverbs 1110 lays out a bold and countercultural vision. When the righteous prosper, the city rejoices. We're here to ask, what does it look like practically to be this type of leader? Leaders willing to invest everything they have so that everyone around them can thrive. Join us on the journey as we lean in, listen, and learn how to become Proverbs 1110 kind of leaders. The kind of leaders that make our cities rejoice. David.
Hello, Rob.
How are you, my friend?
Great. Spring is in the air.
Spring has sprung. The weather is starting to, it's weird. It's almost, it gets me worried about summer, how hot spring and late winter are already.
Yeah, we have a short spring, or at least we have had a short spring in the last few years, which is tough, but savor this time. It's lighter later. Trees are blossoming. It's great.
March might be my favorite month just because of the anticipation. Maybe that's what I like about also when it gets up to Christmas time, but like the idea of the trees and the blooming and all that starting to come to life. It's a good time of the year.
Yes, it is.
Speaking of seasons, this is my transition to the content for our episode today. We're going to be spending today and next week doing some reflecting on a previous season through a really cool partnership that I would love for you to tee up for our listeners. What are our listeners in store for today? What are they going to be hearing?
Yeah, so we're going to repurpose some content that we did about a year ago through our partnership with the Denver Institute for Faith and Work and the Just Leadership Lab that we did with them around their annual conference called Business for the Common Good. I was asked to come speak at that conference. And prior to that, we did some webinars through their network to talk through the ideas of just leadership, the four qualities, did some case studies. We even interviewed some folks. So for the next couple episodes, felt like it would be really appropriate to have our listeners get a window into that content.
Yeah, I love these webinars, and I'm so excited that we're going to be able to make them available to our podcast listeners because it does kind of a deep dive and really gives these qualities teeth. I mean, we're having on the ground rooted conversations. What do business leaders do in X, Y, and Z situation? And then being able to even have listeners respond who participated in the webinar with some live Q&A. So it'll feel a little bit different. It'll be a little bit longer form, but I know that our podcast listeners can handle that. It's well worth kind of savoring this conversation and really grateful for our partnership with Denver. So if you're looking for more context for this episode, if you want to go back and listen to the full recording of David's talk, it is Leadership That Makes the City Rejoice, which was episode 15. They kind of tease up these conversations, but you don't have to do that. You can just jump straight into them fresh if you're just too excited and you're ready to roll your sleeves up. So without further ado, David Shell, I turn the floor back over to you from last year.
For sure. Let's go.
All right.
All right. Let's go ahead and jump in. Thank you so much for coming today to our webinar. Today's topic is the four big ideas of just leadership. And this webinar is part of the Just Leadership Lab. My name is Abby Worland, and I'm the VP of Operations and Finance at Denver Institute for Faith and Work, and we're really glad that you are here today. The Just Leadership Lab is a collection of resources and learning opportunities that look at what is justice and how do we live that out in the world through our work, through our leadership, and through our lives. And the Just Leadership Lab is a collaborative effort between Denver Institute for Faith and Work, where I am, and our amazing friends over at 1110 Leadership, who you're going to meet in a few moments. And over the past year, our organizations have gotten to know one another and really discovered a shared commitment to justice and a shared curiosity about how we can support the learning of others around this topic. And so just really excited to be with you all today. The Just Leadership Lab has three primary goals. First, we want to help people understand what the Bible says about justice, first and foremost. Like, what is God's heart for justice? And then we want to help others navigate some of the tricky things that come up in our everyday lives that require us to think justly. And then third, we want to help people develop a more expansive vision for justice. Today's webinar is primarily going to be focused on those first two goals, understanding biblical justice and navigating culture. We have another webinar in a few weeks that's going to be primarily focused on expanding our vision for justice. So let me introduce you to the amazing folks that I have on the call here with me today. First, we have David Spickard, who is the president and founder and CEO of 1110 Leadership. And then we also have Rob Shields, who is the VP of Strategy for 1110 Leadership. And they have just been so fun to work with and prepare this webinar. And I've learned a lot from them. And I'm really glad that you all get the chance to do the same today. Before I turn it over to them to facilitate the bulk of our conversation, let me show you where we're headed during the next hour or so. Today's webinar is primarily focused on this question. We want to examine what are the qualities we can develop and the questions we can ask ourselves and of others that will help us navigate cultural landmines in our own work and in our own lives. We're going to follow this structure for the webinar. First, we're going to examine what do we even mean by cultural landmines and what are some examples of that. Then we're going to dig into God's heart for justice. Then we're going to look at four qualities of a just leader. And then we'll have some time at the end for some audience Q&A. As we go throughout the webinar, if you do have questions, please put them in the Q&A box at the bottom of your screen so that we can come back to them at the end of our time together. And then we'll finally wrap up with a few next steps that you can take to continue your learning. But without further ado, I'm excited to turn it over to Rob to talk to us about what we mean by cultural landmines.
Thanks so much, Abby. It's a pleasure to be here. We're really looking forward to this conversation. We're by no means experts in justice, but we're on the journey and just really encouraged to be walking on the journey with you and for the folks who are on this call with us. So hopefully we can open up some new connections with some of the folks who are listening in, both with us and with each other. So cultural landmines. So this word culture is a big word that means a lot of different things to a lot of different people in this day and age where the defining of the terms really matters. And so before David kind of walks into laying a foundation of understanding what we mean by biblical justice, that's going to be huge to really build off of that foundation. I think just framing this question, which was really the hook that we are using for to draw folks into this conversation, what is the biggest cultural landmine threatening your business right now? And to unpack that a bit, I mean, what do we mean by culture? I think people understand a landmine. Picture a grenade in the ground, right? Everyone's seen at least maybe one movie where that's happened, so that I don't need to unpack that one as much. But culture, I think, is a term that when we think culture, you may think societal. What are these cultural issues that are out there in the world that we need to engage with? You could think internal to your company. Every company has a culture. And the way that we refer to that in our work is every company has a culture that everyone knows and no one talks about. And so part of our work is in coming alongside leaders is really helping to name those cultural issues internal to a company and a business. But for the purposes of this conversation, I think we're talking about both. It also applies to things like cultural competency when it comes to engaging race and ethnicity. And that's definitely a part of this very wide umbrella. And so we've left space. If you saw the information, some of the questions that we used in some of our marketing materials, we're going to revisit those with some scenarios later. But everyone usually has one of those top of mind issues of this is a cultural issue that we're trying to deal with as leaders, whether that's internal to our company, whether that's external in society that we're grappling with internally. And we all need help knowing what it looks like to navigate those waters because they're really tricky and there are real landmines out there. And so how to do that, I think we're on the journey trying to figure that out and help others along the way. So with that in mind, I would encourage everyone, when you see this question, to actually, if you are so bold, to be able to answer in the chat. We want this to be as engaging and back and forth as possible. And so enter the dialogue with us if you want to check in, and you can put your name next to it, where you're from, if you'd like. But we'd be fascinated to know what are those cultural landmines that you're dealing with. We're going to have some time for Q&A at the end, but I would love to be able to just observe those and maybe give some space to them in the latter part of our conversation. One of the biggest portions of this is we want to get very practical with this webinar. You know, these are heady concepts that honestly we need to engage with theologically, spiritually, really at every level. We're going to talk about the importance of posture later, but also this is meant to be applied and honestly needs to be applied at a deeply practical level. And so we're going to highlight four scenarios here to just stir the pot a little bit. And then we're going to
before we're going to zoom in, then we're going to zoom back out before we zoom back in again. So hopefully you guys don't, you know, I feel your ears are popping on that journey. But all right, so scenario one, Craig's family-owned faith center business owns several convenience stores. He found out that one of those stores has one of the highest sales of lottery tickets and Colt 45 malt liquors in the state and is a site for drug deals in the parking lot. Distraught, he and his family want to change that. What should he do? These are all real life scenarios that we have come across in our work with leaders. So these are actual scenarios. Scenario number two, John runs a property service company. Most of all of his employees in the field are men and women of color. Everyone in his corporate office, though, is white. It feels like he is running two separate companies, and those in the field wonder if there will ever be opportunities to work and lead in the corporate office. What does John do? Scenario number three, Paul's company specializes in the acquisition of high-end multifamily housing communities. Recently, the city where one of his properties is located proposed to establish a Black Lives Matter mural in a prominent area directly outside of the property. Paul's residents and prospective tenants were disappointed and angry that this was even a possibility. As a result, some residents wanted to get out of their contracts and potential residents lost interest in the property. Paul's company and investors in the project were at risk of losing significant amounts of money. What should Paul do? And finally, our last scenario, Debbie's employees were upset that the company did nothing to promote Pride Month. As owner of the company, she was uncomfortable taking a public stand or promoting something that is not in line with her beliefs on sexuality. What does Debbie do in that scenario? So I mentioned we're going to be rolling up our sleeves and we're going to be giving space and talking about the framework for the ways in which we could tackle each of these scenarios. They hit on really, really practical points that I think all of us can relate to at least one of these at some point, if you're in any position of leadership for any amount of time. So without further ado, I'll turn it over to my fearless leader, David Spickard, who will answer all of your justice questions in the next hour.
Appreciate Perfect. That, Rob. Thank you. And I just want to reiterate how excited we are to be in partnership with the Denver Institute for Faith and Work, friends who are walking with us through this. And again, want to say we're not experts, but we recognize that these are real life situations and they're creating a tremendous amount of complexity and challenge for leaders. And we want to approach these from a place of understanding God's heart for justice and how central that is to him. It would be appropriate for me, given the timing of the recording of this webinar, for me to name the event that happened this week that is on most, if not all, of our minds, which is the shooting that took place in Nashville, Tennessee, where a shooter went in and killed 3 9-year-old students and 3 adults, including the head of school. That event took place a mile from where I grew up. I grew up in Nashville, Tennessee, in Green Hills, and go by that church and that school almost daily when I was growing up. And there are family members that I have who are very close, who are have close ties to victims of that tragedy. So here again is another incident, and that's supercharged, that comes with tremendous amount of grief and sadness and lament and mourning that we all should engage in. And then it also raises questions around issues in our society and our culture that many people kind of run with in light of an incident like this. And so here again is another real life scenario where we're trying to navigate this, and God's heart for justice is so important for us to understand. In many ways, this word justice has been hijacked by our culture, and it's being used to mean a variety of different things that a lot of us feel like is outside of the gospel. But in fact, it's actually very central to the gospel if we understand exactly the way God feels about justice. So I know some of you have been with us in the workshop that we did a few weeks ago in Denver, and we're going to go through a bit of what we did there just to set the stage. And also for those of you who are here, this is a quick overview of a foundation for justice that will then tee up how we go deeper in the scenarios that Rob just went through so that we can have some good takeaways about how we might respond. So how does God feel about justice? Well, the word for justice in the Bible is a Hebrew word, mishpat. And mishpat means that everything is as it's supposed to be. It has this sense that we're going to make wrong things right, and that all people are treated equitably and given their due. And mishpat is highly related to the quartet of the vulnerable, the poor, the widow, the foreigner, and the prisoner. So mishpat is both punishing people if they do wrong, but it's also very restorative. It's not just retributive, it's restorative. It's allowing people, particularly those who are most marginalized in a community, to be restored to their full humanness. And so that is the way God defines mishpat. Now, there's another word in scripture, a Hebrew word that goes along with mishpat, and that is tzedakah. And tzedakah actually means righteousness. And this idea is that everything is right and in right relationship with God, with others, ourselves, and creation. And the idea with tzedakah is that if tzedakah was perfectly practiced, in other words, if everything was already right, then there would be no need for mishpat. There would be nothing to fix. So there you see, it's the life of right relationships with God, ourselves, others, and creation. And if tzedakah is practiced perfectly, there would be no need for mishpat. So you see mishpat and tzedakah all throughout scripture. Whenever you read your Bible and you see righteousness and justice together, that's tzedakah and mishpat. So and that is God's definition of social justice. So Pamela, if you go to the next slide, you'll see that when you see righteousness and justice together, that's what God is defining around justice. Tzedakah is the social part. We're in right relationship with one another. It's not just about piety and right living. It's really about right relationship. And so that's the social part. And then mishpat is justice, making everything as it's supposed to be. And so how does God feel about mishpat and tzedakah? He loves righteousness and justice. The earth is full of the steadfast love of the Lord. And righteousness and justice are the foundation of your throne. Steadfast love and faithfulness go before you. So justice and righteousness could not be more central to who God is. And therefore, for those of us who follow him, it should not be more central to who we are. It should be exactly what we're about. And so the question is how do we pursue that? What does it look like from a biblical perspective to pursue justice? And so we want to unpack this verse. It's a very small verse in Proverbs 11:10. And if you notice the name of our company, 11:10 Leadership, this is a clue as to why we named our company 11:10 Leadership. It comes from this small verse, Proverbs 11:10. When the righteous prosper, the city rejoices. A good friend of mine, Dr. Amy Sherman, unpacks this verse so well in her book, Kingdom Calling, which we highly recommend to you guys. A great book on helping us understand not only God's heart for justice, but how to pursue it. The righteous are the tzedakim. So if you remember just a second ago, when we talked about the tzedakah, the righteous are the tzedakim. So you can go to the next slide. The tzedakim are people who are just. And they view their prosperity not as a means for themselves, but for blessing others. And therefore, they steward everything that they have, their time, their money, their resources, their relationships, their education, everything that they have to advance God's peace and justice. So they are the righteous, just like tzedakah is righteousness. Tzedakim are the righteous. These are actual people. This word is used over 200 times in the Old Testament to refer to people who steward their resources not for themselves, but for everyone else. And when that happens, the city rejoices. And the word for that in that verse, rejoice, is talos. And this word is really important because, one, this is the only time it's ever used in scripture, which means this is very intentional as to why this word was used. And second, what it means. And what it means is a wild party. This is people dancing in the streets, going crazy with joy and excitement and a sense of victory, not only because everything is going well, but it even has war connotations. This idea that we have won the war. Victory is ours and our oppressors are gone. So you'll see on this picture, top left is South Africa at the end of apartheid. Top right is VE Day, where everyone went into the streets in Europe dancing because the war was over. Bottom right was Rwanda at the end of the genocide and the civil war. And for those of you who are on the call from Colorado, from Denver, you might remember what happened in 2016 when the Broncos won. And this was the celebration. I mean, this is amazing. Look at that. What we do for our sports teams. And I'm one to talk. Being a North Carolina fan, I've been one to dance in the streets at various times in my life after a big win. But this, you get the picture. It's this wild dancing in the streets, unbridled joy. Why? Because there's a group of people called the Sadakim, and they are prospering. They are getting more power, more wealth, and more influence. And instead of people, even those who are most marginalized in a community, instead of them getting bitter or resentful that the poor are getting poorer and the rich are getting richer, they instead are dancing wildly in the streets because they know that when the Sadakim win, everyone wins. And so this picture of what it means to be the Sadakim is quite profound. In fact, I don't know if we even have a picture or model of what that looks like, of the type of leadership where when we prosper, everyone, including those who are most in need, dance wildly in the streets because we are winning. And so I want to ask you this question as you have this picture in your mind of what the Sadakim are. What would you need to be good at as a leader to cause the whole city or cause rejoicing in your city? In other words, as a leader, what would cause people to dance wildly because of my success? What would I need to be good at as a leader in order for that to happen? Sandy, yes, humility. It's fantastic. Jervis, grace. Being good at generosity, patience, and wisdom. Yeah, Rob. There are a lot of answers to think through. And in many ways, it causes us to have to think through how we would redefine what success is and have a broad picture of what winning is and how we think about connecting to people in such a way that even those who are most in need would dance in the streets. One of the things that would require is that we're known. We're known by people in need and that they see the work that we're doing is good for them. So there's a ton that we can talk about. That just sort of gets our wheels churning as we now transition back to our scenarios, because we want to kind of give a picture of what are qualities that can guide us around the real life scenarios that we talked about at the beginning, and also scenarios that I'm sure each of you are facing, similar kinds that you're facing in your context. In our work, we propose four qualities of a just leader. And of course, there are many, many more qualities than just four, but we found these to be really helpful and foundational to guide the way we think about becoming just as the leader. First is seeing the whole playing field. That just leaders are leaders who know how to see. And we'll talk about what that means to be leaders who see. Second, they build cultural competency. They're able to build trust across cultural divides and know how to do that, both the skill and the understanding to know how to do that. Third, they give power away, which is really interesting in this day and age, because a lot of people would talk about giving power away as the means through which we can create equitable opportunities for everyone. And that's true, but we have to understand what kind of power we're talking about in order for that power to be given away in a way that really elevates everyone. And then finally, the fourth quality is they take bold and courageous action. They know that they can't just sit and do nothing in the face of injustice. They know that they may not take the right steps. They're willing to make some mistakes, but they know that inaction is just not an option in the face of injustice. So we're going to use those four qualities as we revisit our scenarios and have a conversation around what we would do if we were John, Paul, Debbie, and Craig.
That's great. Here's how this next part is going to work. I'm going to kind of interview David and Rob as we look at those qualities in the context of those scenarios we talked about earlier. So let's start with the first quality that we covered, that idea of seeing the whole playing field. And we're going to go back to the scenario with Craig and his convenience stores. And the text of the scenario is there for you to refer back to. But for Rob and David, I'm curious, look at these questions on the right-hand side and take this as you will. I'll read through all three of them. If you're Craig, what does Craig need to consider about his community and the external factors that may be influencing this situation? And then what might Craig need to see in others or in himself as he thinks about responding to this situation?
Yeah. Well, as we get into these, I will say just in general, before I answer your question, Abby, there are a lot of answers to these scenarios. There's not one answer. And I wish we could just give you the formula. So if you came for the one answer or the formula, or you have a particular scenario where you're looking for that one answer, that's going to be difficult to do. I think what we found in this is making sure we're asking the right questions. So you'll see that that's what we're trying to do. By having these questions up on the screen. And also, we mentioned this earlier, is just having the right posture as we engage with these issues. And a posture of, you guys have already said it, humility, patience, wisdom, grace, kind of an open-handedness, a willingness to look at our own selves before we point the finger at other people, things like that, that help guide the way we answer these questions and walk through these scenarios. In terms of Craig, this is an interesting one. You know, the challenge with a business leader when faced with a cultural landmine, first of all, is we want to fix it. You know, we want to be quick to fix and quick to rush to do, partly because that's just the way we're made. We're made to fix problems and create solutions. The other is we have time constraints. We have issues around our own time, our need to be competitive, to be profitable. And so for us, we typically will then say, well, we need to solve this problem with a business solution. And so we'll be quick to do what we know and forget the other aspects to this situation that we miss. And in this situation, this has much more cultural dynamics and community dynamics that are required for a business leader to address than just addressing it with a business solution. So for Craig, it's what does he need to see in himself as he walks into this situation? What are his motivations? What are his biases that he may bring to the table? Is he trying to, you know, do something good for the community and sees himself coming in to kind of, for lack of a better word, be a savior and do something that is good for the community, but he really doesn't know the community, doesn't know what the community needs, and hasn't really understood what are the root causes that is making this behavior happen? And can a business solution or can a solution address those dynamics beyond just, you know, figuring out what to do simply with the store. Rob, what would you add to that?
Yeah, I'm not a farmer, but I really like farming analogies here when you talk about the soil, because I think you could see this as, is it a seed issue or a soil issue, right? If you want to bear different kinds of fruit. And I think that you raised that point well, David, already. I think it's really vital with that first question that Craig knows the soil of the community. And I think that's a challenge sometimes for business leaders who lack, and sometimes I think the church can very much reinforce this, a rootlessness where they don't see, honestly, their business could be anywhere. It doesn't make a difference. I actually live down the street from this convenience store for 4 years. So I know this community. I live there. This was my neighborhood convenience store. But if you're a business owner and you don't live down the street, but all of your constituents are coming from a geographic circle on a map, and you're making decisions that influence those folks in that circle, but you don't know anyone inside that circle. You know, I have a nonprofit background. That's a recipe for disaster in the nonprofit space. It's a recipe for disaster in the business space, I would argue, of knowing your context. But I would say before knowing it, knowing that your context has value. And I think that's a discipleship issue that's a kind of a gap in the Western church of just this rootlessness of we can be anywhere the gospel needs to go, kind of Great Commission to the four corners of the earth. That's true, but it also is written within history and applies to to a specific context. When Jesus entered a specific time of history, and we're meant to contextualize it to a specific time of history. So I think the importance of knowing the community in which you're rooted, are you rooted in your community as a business? And is your business perceived as seeking the welfare of the community, where you're pouring your resources back in to it, to the community's flourishing as a result of your flourishing? I mean, that has an exponential factor there, because, you know, unless you're of a certain wealth, the number of zeros that you're going to do individually may be very limited. But when you are stewarding a business, that has an amplifying effect. That's more people dancing in the street, maybe than even you personally can affect.
Is it realistic for Craig to take that time? And how would you advise him to build relationships with key leaders in the community so that he can know the community himself and be known? Like how does a business leader take the time and with a sense of urgency and realize that that's central to having this lead to the right solution?
That I would answer your question with another question, David. Can I do that?
Okay, here we go.
I think it depends on, does he see this as a business problem for his business, or does he see this as a community issue for his neighbors? Mm-hmm. Meaning, like, this is happening in my community. And I guess I'm speaking to the bifurcation of faith and work here. This dichotomy of the divide between the sacred and the secular, I think, pours over into this conversation. Does Craig have the time? Well, how much time is on the table here? Are we talking about the 5 lunches slots that Craig has, the lunch breaks that he could take during the 9 to 5? Is that all that's on the table? Or are all 21 of the meals that he eats every day, every week on the table? That is this seen as just a professional issue, or can it bleed over into the personal? I would argue that line really, you know, there needs to be boundaries. Of course, obviously, there are healthy boundaries between professional and personal. But I think that the ceiling for impact is going to be limited here. If he just sees this as a professional problem that affects his boardroom and not his living room.
Yeah, it's a real challenge. And I know some of you may be listening going, this is just unrealistic to think about that. But we do have part of the end of the story of this scenario. The Craig and his company, they decided in order to solve the problem, they decided to actually tear down this store. With the idea that if they made it, refreshed the store and made it look nice, had more food and drink options, did more landscaping, and just made it just really upfit the store, then that would be the way that they solve the problem. And so they did that. Everything was all back together. And guess what the highest sellers were after that was done? Lottery tickets, Colt 45 malt liquors, and drug deals in the parking lot. And so they had spent over $1 million trying to solve the problem by just refitting or refreshing the store, but didn't realize the complex community dynamics that were at play and needed to really pay attention to that and figure out what's a holistic strategy. It can still be a business strategy, business solution, but we got to think more broadly about what is the outcome that we're trying to achieve. And therefore, we need to have a more holistic strategy because we might spend money and not even solve the problem.
And one thing I'll add, I would say the solution obviously should not be limited to just Craig. You know, when you talk about getting to know gatekeepers in that community that could speak and help guide him, but, and that kind of speaks to what we see in others, but also how does he bring others along the journey with him within the company? Because while he, as a CEO, may have very limited time, there is some time he could invest in this, but there's also time that his employees could invest, but he sets that tone. And so it's not limited as only as far as Craig's calendar will allow.
Yeah.
That's great. Thank you both. We are going to move forward to the next quality of a Just Leader. But as we go through, if you have questions, follow-up questions to anything that Rob and David are talking about, please put them in the chat. Please put them in the Q&A so that we can come back to them. So we just talked about seeing the whole playing field, this idea that to be a Just Leader, you need to know both yourself deeply and your community, your external circumstances in a real and deep way. The next quality we want to look at is this idea of building cultural competency. And what does that mean for a leader to build that skill for themselves? In this case, we're going to think about John running his property services company. And what are the questions that John could ask himself to build his own cultural competency? And as we talk through these questions, think about what are the things that you're facing in your job? Are these questions that you might need to think about for yourself to build your own cultural competency? So David and Rob, as we think about John and his property services company, what are some of the cultural realities that he's facing as a leader? Talk to us a little bit about that question.
Yeah, I'll jump in. I think one of the cultural realities he's facing is that in the property services industry, this dynamic is pretty normal, where you have people in the field, I'm speaking generally, people in the field are people of color, and those who are in the corporate office are white and have those different types of profiles. So the question is, how do we create a new normal? Is one of the questions for John to ask and pursue. Part of it for him too is to look at his own network and see, where is he engaging with peers himself who are leaders of color, who can also demonstrate to him that they're, you know, obviously leaders of color in positions of influence and power in corporate offices, and they're models that change the normal dynamic that we often see in this industry, in this environment. And then certainly along with that, it's the steps that he takes as a leader, not only to give, you know, to give value to all of his employees, but also in this case, if there's a real intent to help his employees in the field grow and have opportunities and access to opportunities that may not have been afforded to them, he needs to take the time, and he needs again to model this for his other employees on how to make sure those employees are known and valued, and that he understands their world and view life through their lenses and begin to empathize in a way that allows him to see life and the things that are normative that he might not understand in order for him to lead them well. Often in situations like this, companies don't realize that they have a culture and cultural norms within their company that are not normative for everyone in their company because of the different cultures that everybody comes from. And so people from those different cultures are not able to thrive in those companies because we haven't really understood the barriers that they may be facing that we don't even see that they have to face, or language that we use that is not normal for certain people in our companies. And we have to be really sensitive to that and understand then how do we help our people either navigate that, or we need to change the way we've developed our company culture in such a way so that everyone feels like they can be all of who they're designed to be in our company. They don't have to check themselves at the door because of the culture that we've created at our business.
Yeah, to build off of that, David, I think there's a recurring theme here from scenario number one of engaging on the surface versus going down to the root cause. And we've seen this play out a lot since 2020 with what happened with the move for racial justice and just kind of this awakening that has happened across the country post George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery. I think a lot of churches and companies were like, what do? We're not diverse enough. We have all white leadership and that's no longer acceptable societally, like feeling cultural pressure to change that. And I think sometimes I think that there was more attention paid to being quick to diversify, you know, optically, i.e. let's recruit different fish into this pond and not do the pre-work of assessing the pond. And to your point, naming that the pond has a culture. And if you're not willing to do that inner work first, what you're going to end up doing is evaluating the fish that come in and that can't stake it out as well. They couldn't hack it. What was wrong with that fish that they didn't make it here or that they couldn't elevate within leadership? And I think to your point, if the people of color in this company, they know what the culture is. Mm-hmm. Because usually I've learned how to be more culturally competent in my life, usually by answering that question number two, being taught by leaders of color who've helped me to see my own blind spots that I think I could not have seen otherwise, realizing that I have a culture. And then a lot of times white people don't realize that we have a culture. We don't know how to, we don't think about it because our experience is very normative and kind of has been at the center. And so I think that it's a really interesting dynamic at play there of, is there a willingness from leadership and a humility to be able to do the internal work of saying, I have a culture. It actually has impact on my employees. Can I set up feedback in a way where without removing the power dynamics, like this isn't in a coffee with the person that you hired and you could fire if they give the wrong answer. But, you know, are there mechanisms in place where you could ask questions like, what's challenging about our culture? How would you describe our culture? And compare it to how you would describe your culture and just swap notes and see the differences. And said, in the posture in which the leaders that we work with that have taken that posture and said, we're going to do the internal assessment work of the pond, I think that is crucial. And I think ultimately will then lead to different outcomes here, because that second question is huge. Because if that person is white and they don't have any diversity in their own networks, they don't have a vision for non-white leadership in their company because they don't know any non-white peers in the sector. And that's a problem. And that means you're going to have a limited capacity to seeing the potential in your employees.
Thank you both. So far we've talked about just leaders being able to see the whole playing field and having a commitment to understanding their and building their cultural competency. Now we're going to move forward to the third quality of a just leader. And this is the idea of giving power away, which seems very counterintuitive to a lot of the things we hear and see about leadership. And so I'm excited to hear what you all say about this. So for this quality, we're talking about giving power away, and we want to think about Paul, who runs the housing communities with the mural across the street. And for this one, there are some power dynamics at play in this scenario. And so I want to focus on the first question here on the list. For Paul, what are some of the power dynamics, both historical and current, at play in this situation? And let's start there. How should he think about power dynamics and then respond to them?
Rob, you want to start this one?
No, but I will.
This is a tough one. This
what is are, a really yeah, what, are the, what are the power dynamics? I mean, do you want to name the power dynamics that are at play historically here? I mean, goodness gracious. Paul's in a tough spot, right? I mean, depending on your perspective, you may not feel too sorry for Paul. You're like, oh, CEO does well for himself, runs this big company, real estate company, doing just fine, you know, financially, I'm sure. But I mean, this is a really layered conversation that is happening within his sphere, but also is being shaped by cultural influences that Paul does not control. There are a lot of moving factors in this conversation. And honestly, talk about landmines. This one has a lot. There's a lot of ways this could go south. And I mean, I think it's just good to name that, you know, we didn't name Paul's race here, but let's say he's white in this scenario. And the discussion is around a Black Lives Matter mural. And the residents here, I think you could safe to assume at least some of them, if not almost all of them, that are disappointed and angry are white. We don't know, but I think that that's a safe assumption. Naming the fact that he is inheriting, if you don't know your stuff, if you don't know what's in the cultural waters here of nationally, you know, because Black Lives Matter is not a local phenomenon to Paul's city. That's a global phenomenon. If you are not paying attention to the cultural waters, you could sink very easily in this situation by putting your foot in your mouth in ways that even with the right heart posture, it's going to really be tough. And so I think you got to know the waters. You got to know the waters and you got to, I think this is a huge one that points to this idea of being reactive. We saw a lot of business leaders be like, how do I react in a 2020 environment? And I think this really speaks to, man, we need to be asking questions 1, 2, and 3 in a proactive way before this situation presents itself. And you need to be investing, like Craig, a lot of relational capital, as much as you can, into the different stakeholders here. And you need, are you rooted in your community? Does your community know you? Are you known as someone who's seeking the flourishing of your community? Because that changes this conversation. I think it really lets the air out of the balloon a little bit if Paul is known on a first name basis versus if Paul is just the big bad developer that is swoops in or might live in another city, right? There's a lot of dynamics at play there. And Paul, honestly, Paul may live in another city. Then maybe we're shifting this focus on what can the person that is rooted in the community do and how can Paul support that person? So that's hard, man. It's got a lot there. What would you do with this situation?
Well, just a brief comment and we'll get to the last scenario. This is an example of how difficult it is because sometimes being just and being profitable are at odds. And, you know, you have to really think about what is success. Is success about winning or success about flourishing? And someone in Paul's situation is going to have skills that are able to navigate the real complexity and nuance of this. So someone who's a really good communicator, who knows how to communicate well, knows how to invest in people and can see things on both sides and know how to communicate vision and purpose to all of the stakeholders and be proactive versus reactive, like you said, Rob. And the challenge is trying to stay kind of not being so influenced by the cultural narratives around these issues, but to really be able to pinpoint what really is central to these issues so that they can bring people in instead of having people resist. And that just takes a lot of relationship building, trust building, and skill and knowing how emotional intelligence and honestly, really great communication skills to navigate this situation.
Thank you both. The fourth quality of a just leader that we want to cover briefly today is this idea of taking bold and courageous action. So we've built our cultural competency, we've seen the whole playing field, we've given power away, and then also what do we need to do next? What is the action that we need to take? And so in this situation, we're talking about Debbie and Pride Month. The scenario is here on the slide. And so Rob and David, we've got just a few minutes left, but talk to us about what kind of bold, courageous action might be applicable for Debbie in this situation that she finds herself in?
Yeah, I'll jump in, Rob. So it's the time I had you do the last one. This is also a challenging one. When we talk about bold and courageous action, we talk about it in two different ways. One is bold and courageous action that I personally need to take that is challenging for me. And then what is bold and courageous action that I'm taking to sort of try to right a wrong in our society? And when we talk about this, we talk about the action is oftentimes unpopular. It's misunderstood. It takes time. And so Debbie is in a situation where she's being asked by her employees to do something that she doesn't believe in because she doesn't agree with perspective of sexual preference and gender identity, and has a line that she has where she doesn't want to cross what she believes is God's truth, which is important. It's important for us to understand that when Jesus engaged people around these kinds of issues, he ate with sinners, tax collectors, but he valued them and he gave them a sense of belonging, but he never abdicated the truth of God's truth. So he knew how to navigate both. And so the key for Debbie here is how is her company creating a sense of belonging for everyone in the company, no matter what their background is and what they, whether they agree with her or not, and the perspective they take around this particular issue. And hopefully, and this is not guaranteed, but hopefully, if there is such a sense of value that I belong, that I'm loved, that I'm cared for at this company, then I'm not going to pound my fist to have our company promote or, you know, post something on social media around this topic. I may like for them to, if I'm coming from that perspective, but hopefully I know my leader and I know that she values me. And therefore I'm not going to be as aggressive in requiring that of my company.
Yeah. I think this speaks just succinctly to what are you proactively doing to make your people feel heard and known with a sense of belonging. It really just deflates the tension of so much being put on how do I react in this exact situation in a very non-relational way on social media. You know, so I think if you are loving people in a proactive way and they understand that you can't always make the decision that's going to make everyone happy. I mean, if you're a leader, you disappoint people all the time. And so I think every employee understands that at some level, which I think speaks to back being excellent communication with the way that third question is worded as well. And just saying, are we communicating with excellence and kindness, even if we go in a different direction, and transparency, but proactivity is huge.
Thank you both. Before we move into wrapping up our webinar for today, we've got two questions that I want to go back to that are from the audience. As we talk through these four qualities of a just leader, Sandy has a great question. She says, in each of these scenarios, in each of the situations we've just talked through, we've talked about a leader taking time to understand the situation, time to build their cultural competency, et cetera. And her question is, how can a leader build time allocations into their strategy to accommodate time when cultural landmines surface? Can you talk a little bit to that?
That's a great question, Sandy.
How much time do we have, David? I know
we got 3 minutes.
I know where you're going.
Yeah, we got 3 minutes. Yeah. Uh-huh. This is the first thing we talk about with our leaders when we do these just leadership groups. All of them are overwhelmed, busy, frenetic. And this notion of being just is we have to, you know, I don't know. I mean, a lot of this is reorienting ourselves a bit. Well, I shouldn't say a bit, a lot on, again, how we approach work, how we invest in our people so that we trust them to create some time for us as leaders. And then ultimately, what is success and how much is enough? And we have to balance that with, again, being competitive and profitable as companies. But that's a really good question with a long answer. But that would be some initial ideas of the way we address this with our leaders.
I would succinctly say in a sentence, being just requires margin and a willingness to be interrupted, which I think are really culturally, the business world in the West, America, really, really bad at these things. And we honestly don't have time. We don't think we have the time. We're not willing to make the time. And I would start with looking at your Sabbath. Are you Sabbathing? Which feels selfish, but it's really not. Like this is a built-in margin and rhythm that actually I think sets a tone for the rest of how you live your week. And so usually if a leader is really bad at some of these things, I don't have the time, we start with rest and ask, what are your rhythms of rest? What does that Sabbath look like for you? And we start there, and that actually gets at a lot of the root of what we're talking about.
We don't have time, Jervis, for your question, but I do want to point everyone's attention to what Jervis put in the chat. I'm going back to Craig's scenario number one, where he says, what if Craig took profits from the products that were being sold at his convenience store and then put it back into the community for financial education, maybe through local churches? That I thought that was an interesting point to think about, like, how can we be creatively just? And so consider that question. We don't have time to talk about it today, but Jervis, thank you so much for putting that in the chat. And I challenge you all to think about that as we go about our days. We have two things to quickly wrap up our webinar for today. David and Rob, would you give us a final word before I talk about logistics?
I would just say, you know, this is the tip of the iceberg. You know, as Rob mentioned at the beginning, being just is a journey, not a destination, and it's a long journey. And so we're thankful that you've joined us for this hour. We're happy to be available to go deeper as you have questions.
I would say for me, what has been really life-giving on this journey, and I haven't always done a good job of keeping this at the center, is that I am not accepted by God based on how just I am. And when I live into that grace and I move from grace, it actually makes me more just. But when I think just is a performance to earn God's love and acceptance, it's a dance that quickly turns sour and I end up burning out or getting bitter or all the above. And so I think this is a journey that's meant to have grace in your backpack. This is not meant to be added more bricks in your backpack where you feel heavier from this call. I think that's the hope of the gospel in this, is that there is a deep well of grace available to us on this journey. And the Holy Spirit just wants to come alongside us as we fail forward on this journey.
Thank you all for being here today. You are going to get an email either today or first thing tomorrow morning with a few resources. It will have a just leadership assessment that you can take. I took it and it was really challenging and humbling for me to think through the way I show up at work and areas that I may need to spend more time considering in my own leadership. There's also going to be a link. We encourage you to register for our next webinar, which is going to be on April 12th in a couple of weeks. And then also you'll receive a link to the recording of this webinar. So thank you all so much for being here today. We really appreciate your time and your attention for the Just Leadership Lab. Thank you so much.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
To learn more about 1110 Leadership, visit our website at 1110leadership.com. That's the numerals 1-1, then spelled out T-E-N, leadership.com. That's 1-1-T-E-N, leadership.com. There you'll find more resources to equip you on the journey of becoming an 1110 leader. You can also get connected to our growing leadership network. If you've enjoyed this episode, share it with a friend. To help others find us, you can also rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts.